Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Drew. 35-30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. If you want to tune in that way and join the conversation, Giants.com, Giants mobile app, Lance Meadow, John Schmelk with you. We will continue to review the Giants and the Saints, obviously a disappointing 52-49 defeat down in the Superdome. We can also look ahead, Lance, and start getting ready for the Tampa Bay Bucs, which will be a very, very difficult game. The Bucs coming off a big win against the Falcons in overtime, so we could talk about that a little bit. But Lance, coming off the conference calls yesterday, we heard from Tom Coughlin. We heard from a couple of the players, including Eli Manning. Nothing a whole lot new out of those press conferences. No word on injuries yet. We'll probably know more when Tom Coughlin addresses the media at his weekly press conference tomorrow at 11. But really just more disappointment over the way the defense played, and I hope that they can step up against the team in the Bucs, who have a very good running game next week. Rookie quarterback in Jameis Winston, who's gotten better as the season's gone along, and a couple of good weapons outside. Mike Evans will play in this game. We'll see about Austin Seferian, Jenkins, and Vincent Jackson.
Yeah, Jenkins is dealing with a shoulder injury. He's missed the last few games. Jackson's been also dealing with injuries of his own, so that's right now a question mark. Mike Evans, who you mentioned, I mean, he's been Jameis Winston's favorite target, John, this season. He's got about a quarter of the targets. There's over 200 targets, and Evans has been targeted 53 times, so he seems to be a real favorite for Jameis Winston. And, you know, Winston, the numbers show, which is typical for any rookie, John, once you get your feet underneath you, you get more and more comfortable with the speed of the NFL game. First four games, Winston has 6 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. What has he done in the last 3 games? 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. So he's obviously done a better job protecting the football. You think, hey, you're going up against a rookie quarterback. Offensive line has dealt with some injuries. Hey, there's going to be opportunities to take away the football, but he has done a much better job in terms of protecting that.
Well, Lance, and absolutely, and that's what the Giants are going to try to do in this game. They're going to try to get those takeaways, get those turnovers, and try to do what they did for the first, heck, they did it last week.
Every single game.
Too. Get those takeaways and, you know, try to get some defensive scores, throw the Bucs off their game. But that'll be difficult given the skill position guys the Buccaneers have. Now, the Giants will hope to get a couple of guys back on defense this week, John Beeson being one. He seemed pretty close last week, so I'm thinking with an additional week of rest, you would hope that he can go try to slow down Doug Martin, who's really having a resurgent year after 2 down years, after I think he was offensive rookie of the year when the year he first came out.
Doug Martin, he had a great rookie campaign.
He had a fantastic rookie year. And then you hope to get Prince Mukamara back, which to me is even more important. Get him outside. You know, he's a physical player. Match him up with one of those big wide receivers. He's trying to come back from that pec strain. If you can get him back along with Beeson, those are two big cogs that can help stop two of the bigger weapons that the Bucs have on offense.
Well, and the other thing to note, and I'm not trying to raise expectations, but Tom Coughlin was asked about Jason Pierre-Paul, and he did say that they're going to progressively bring him along this week. They're going to give him more work. He didn't rule anything out for this next game. Obviously, you still are protected by that two-game window in terms of the exemption.
And Tom actually said, we're going to push the envelope. So yeah. I think they're going to test JPP this week and see what he can do. And if they determine, hey, look, this guy's pretty ready here, and we think even if he can only give us 20 to 25 snaps and, you know, third and long and second and long and such, I don't see why they wouldn't try it. So
absolutely.
If that's the case and they think he's ready, go for it. Quite frankly, this team can use all the help they can get rushing the passer, Lance. We've talked about it. A sane offensive line that struggled this year. They really didn't get much of a whiff of pressure last week. Robert Ayers got in there a couple times. DeMontre Moore late on that one.
Just 3 quarterback hits.
Hit. So, obviously, not a whole lot going on there with the pass rush. If you can get JPP out there, if he can just give you a little bit of a spark, that's great. Now, remember, last year, even when he was, you know, relatively healthy, he was inconsistent from game to game. So you hope he can play like the guy that played in the final 6 or 7 games of last year. Maybe he'll give you at least a little bit of a spark on that defensive line.
Well, he can certainly provide that, John, but I think more important, you know, just to get him out there so that he begins the process of getting more and more comfortable in game play. You mentioned, hey, there's no harm in throwing him out there for 20 snaps. Even if he was 100% ready to go, he'd only probably play about 20 snaps anyway. They're not going to throw him in here and give him 60 to 70 snaps right off the bat.
Yeah, just to get his cardiovascular ready.
Correct. He's going to be on a snap limit. So, I mean, if they feel that his conditioning is at the point where, you know, we throw him in there here or there, he can get some good work in, I wouldn't be surprised if they take a chance with that. But I think it's important for him to start to get his legs underneath him as opposed to start worrying about, well, in one game, what can JPP do for the pass rush? It's going to be baby steps. I'd be very surprised if he comes in and all of a sudden, you know, they get in 5 or 6 sacks a game. I think people need to put expectations in check. But as I've mentioned this time and time again, and John, you and I have had multiple conversations, the trade deadline is today. It's the equivalent of acquiring a player midseason by getting JPP back. Regardless of the question marks surrounding him, you're getting a body now that you can rotate in on the defensive line that you didn't anticipate, at least in the early stages of this season.
And I'm going to try to do a semi-preemptive strike here. As you mentioned, this is the trade deadline. And I'm sure we're going to get a lot of tweets and calls.
You're going
out
on a
limb,
by the way, with making that statement.
I have not looked at the caller list yet. Let's see. Do we have any trade guys here? No, we do not. I do not see any trade calls on the line right now.
Well, but that doesn't mean they're going to stick to the topic. Hold on here. You know,
so I mean, maybe I shouldn't have said anything. You may have opened up Pandora's box.
I guarantee you the first guy we go to is now, you should purposely ask John Schmelk a trade question just to ruffle his feathers.
Let me say this. Be very leery and wary of giving up draft picks for players, especially in the situation the Giants are now at 500. You know, we know that the team's not perfect. They have a lot of things they need to improve on. They're still in first place in the NFC East in a great position to try to win the division. And obviously, you want to do everything you can to win that division. If the right trade comes along for the right player at the right price, you go ahead and you make it. But remember a couple different things here, folks. One, understand the finances of certain things, depending on what players make. Two, understand that these trades have to be agreed to by both sides. You might want to trade for a guy and get up a 6th or 7th round pick. Yay, fun, awesome. The other team's going to want to make that trade too. So those are the things I will throw out there as make sure you keep those in mind before you call up, you know, saying the Giants should go out there and make a trade for a certain player. And we saw last night the Broncos decided to, you know, try to improve their tight end position. They lost Julius Thomas last year, and they bring in a guy in Vernon Davis who is just as good of an athlete as any other tight end in this league, Lance. He's developed into a fairly decent blocker. And ever since, frankly, Colin Kaepernick became the quarterback up there, and Alex Smith left, Vernon Davis hasn't been the same guy. So he'll see if he can rekindle some of that spark in the Broncos offense with Peyton Manning, who obviously had a great rapport with Julius Thomas. I'm sure they'll try to use Vernon Davis in the same way. And I didn't happen to catch a lot of that game on Sunday night between the Packers and the Broncos. I'm wondering if you had a chance to catch much of it. Did the Broncos offense look a lot different coming off that bye? Did they reinstall some of that old stuff, or was Manning just running Kubiak stuff a lot better?
No, I think it was a combination of a variety of factors, a little bit new stuff in terms of what Manning was allowed to do. They also had the running game going, which they had not been able
to do. Ronnie Hillman started that game.
And C.J. Anderson, both of them, I mean, were very effective on the ground. I thought Manning also looked crisp in terms of his decision-making, in terms of protection. Guys made plays for him. So I think it was a variety of factors. I think Kubiak gave in a little bit. Manning gave in a little bit. But most important, you know, the Broncos had no running game. And there was an interesting stat, actually, John, speaking of Denver. I believe it was maybe 2 weeks ago, and I think it still has stayed the same, even though the Giants have gone up slightly. The Giants and the Broncos were the only two teams in the NFL who had a 500 record or better, yet ranked 28th or lower in terms of rushing yards per game. Now, the Giants have gone up. I think they're 26 right now. But those two teams had struggled to run the football yet because of takeaways and opportunistic defenses. They
the
were
Broncos
still able to get over them.
Probably the best in football.
Well,
right
what
now.
They did to Aaron Rodgers, John, I don't think I've ever seen a defense make him feel uncomfortable.
Did DeMarcus Ware play in that game on Sunday night? Was he back or is he still out?
You know, I was in and out of the game. I wasn't looking necessarily all the personnel.
But honestly, I got home and I made the decision I'm going to watch the Mets play in the World Series. I'm a Yankee fan, but.
You can balance both.
Well, you do. I work with people. You know, Madge works for the Mets. We wanted to see him get a title. My dad's a Mets fan. Wanted to see him enjoy a title, first one since '86. So I didn't have a chance to see if DeMarcus was playing
play
that game.
The
he
Packers.
Did play in that
yeah.
game. So he only missed that one game, and then he had the bye. So, I mean, the Broncos' defense is just, you know, off the charts good. Their corners are great. They got the two pass rushers on the outside. They're stopping the run, so they're great. One other thing I want to get to before we get to your calls, then we'll fill your calls in for all 50 minutes. I know we've been – laxing on the tweets, too, over the last couple weeks. We'll try to get some of your tweets, too, if we find that some of them can stimulate some good conversation. The NFL did release a statement regarding that final penalty in the Giant game against the Saints. This is from the New York Daily News, our buddy Ralph Vacchiano. NFL spokesman Michael Signora, who's one of their excellent PR guys over there. As you guys know, on that final play, and this gets a little complicated, so bear with me as I kind of run through this here. You punt it. There's a long return. There's a fumble. All right? Now, technically by rule, at that point of the game, you cannot advance a fumbled punt. That's the rule. You can't do it. So once the Saints recover that fumble, they cannot advance the football. The play is, in effect, dead. So the question then that gets asked is this. It's very simple. If the play is dead, how do you commit a penalty after the play is dead? If once the Saint has the second Saint that recovers the fumble is possession, the play is dead, how is there a penalty afterwards? Well, here's how there's a penalty afterwards. It's the nature of the penalty that made it count. The fact that it's a personal foul penalty, even though it was post-play and the play was dead, the fact that it was a personal foul means the penalty still has to be enforced. Much like you have unsportsmanlike contact, which can be a personal foul, things like that.
Which could be tacked on after the play.
Exactly. Yeah. Those penalties, any personal fouls must be enforced regardless if it happens after a play should have been blown dead. Now, the NFL claims that was the confusion at the end of the game when the referees' conference said there was a penalty, then there was no penalty, then there was a penalty again. Somebody, it went ding in their head that, oh, shoot, it's a personal foul, this has to be enforced, etc. Now, whether or not that's the story after the fact, who knows? It looked like, you know, there was some confusion, people looking maybe influenced by the crowd and the video boards, who knows? But that's a statement from the NFL that the reason that got enforced, and in the end, it was the right call, and no one ever disputed that in the end it was the right call. And the referees, it took them a little while to figure it out now, and they should have figured it out quicker, that since it was a personal foul, the penalty had to be enforced, and that's why the 15 yards got enforced. By the way, not from the spot of the penalty, but the 15 spot yards got fumble. Enforced from the spot of the fumble recovery, because that's when the play would have been blown.
Which was the 47, you tack on the 15-yard penalty, that's how you get it to the 32.
Actually, you're right. It was the spot of the fumble.
The spot of the fumble.
The ball can't be enforced. That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ball can't be advanced, excuse me.
And then Sean Payton, and I mentioned this when Jeff and I were on yesterday, in his post-game presser, they still had 5 seconds left. So his thought process changes while this replay is going on. He says initially they were going to come out.
Run a play?
And they were going to run a play.
Boy, that's tight.
Then they realize, wait a minute, the penalty gives it to them at the 32. They're just going to have Forbath go out there and try to nail a 50-yard field
goal. And I want to bring up another situation into that game. Because I know a lot of the fans, I hear a couple of the talk show hosts over on FAN, you know, complaining. Just punt the ball out of bounds. Punt the ball out of bounds. Well, hold on a second. All right, when that punt takes place.
Pages are coming out. This is always dangerous.
I'm just double-checking.
It's always dangerous.
I have my facts right here.
Yes.
So Brad Wing is setting up. And I guessed wrong, by the way. On our postgame show, I guessed that was the Giants only 3 and out of the game. It wasn't. I think they had one other earlier in the contest. But anyway, the point being, Brad Wing's punting from the Giants' 25-yard line, right? All right. When he's punting, there's 20 seconds to go. Let's say you just punt it out of bounds. Now, you can't just automatically go and punt the ball out of bounds and have a 40-yard net every time. That's not how this works. If you could do that, every punter would punt it out of bounds every single time. Because they get a 40-yard net, everyone goes happy. There's no chance of a return, etc., okay? So if you're going to go punt it out of bounds, there's a risk involved. There's a chance you only punt it 30 yards. Maybe you get it 35 yards. So let's say from the 25-yard line, Brad Wing punts it 30 yards, okay? Since the ball goes out of bounds, only 5 or 6 seconds go off the clock. So that means the Saints had the ball with the timeout on their own 45-yard line.
Great field position.
They still have plenty of room to get in the field goal range. To say that punting out of bounds is some type of, you know, panacea that would solve all these issues at the end of the game, guess what? The Saints would still have between, what do you think, 5-6 seconds it takes for the snap of the ball to go out of bounds?
Yeah, I would say that's a fair estimate.
All right, so let's say 13 seconds, 12 or 13 seconds to be safe, okay? And the Saints have the football, they have a timeout.
Correct.
And one 15-yard pass, one 20-yard pass, they're still in field goal range anyway. So that's not an ultimate problem solve. And if you guys remember, Brad Wing is the same guy who 2 weeks earlier, and again, Brad Wing's had a great year. He's been a godsend. I'm not trying to criticize Brad Wing here. This is the case for all punters. What happened when they told him to either punt it really high or punt it out of bounds to Darren Sproles when they played the Eagles a couple weeks ago?
Well, there were some mishaps and miscues.
There were some mishaps and miscues. That is very, very diplomatic way of putting it. There were a couple 20-yard punts.
Yep.
There were balls that flew out of bounds. What happens if you have one of those? And all of a sudden, the Saints have the ball on their own 40-yard line with 13 seconds to go. Or rather, the Giants' 40-yard line, the Giants' 45-yard line with 13 seconds to go. And you got a timeout. Then you're really up you knows what.
It's risky. Yeah.
So there's risk to every decision you could possibly make. So that is not like a universal fix-all, just kick it out of bounds.
Well, and the other thing to counter the argument about that they should have punted it out of bounds, I mean, look at the track record for the Giants special teams in terms of coverage this season.
Fantastic.
Especially on punts. I mean, they gave up the kickoff return to the Redskins, but on punts, coverage has been great. So why can't you have faith in, hey, that unit can make a tackle, make a stop, and force the Saints to have to go 60 yards to perhaps get in field goal range? I don't think that's asking for much. So, you know, I have no problem in terms of that decision-making. One other thing I wanted to throw out in terms of some changes, we should mention the Tremaine McBride fumble return for a touchdown,
yep,
John, has been changed to an interception return. Should have been an interception return to begin with, but, hey, they had their debate, they had their fun, they overlooked the playbook, and they determined it's now a pick six for Tremaine McBride. And also,
and I thought it should have been a pick six.
Exactly. No, I'm wholeheartedly in agreement with you there.
Never established himself as a runner. Then again, it seems to be a random flip of the coin. What constitutes a guy becoming a runner these
days? Now, I pointed this out on Twitter, not to get off topic. I know we'll get to your phone calls here in a second, but the fantasy implications off of that play, John. You know, Drew Brees goes from 511 passing yards to 505.
And a minus two for an interception.
So
it's big. And yeah. Willie Snead gets a plus
two for not having a fumble back. He gets the fumble back, yeah. Just thought I'd throw that out.
Anyway.
Yes. We ready?
Speaking of fantasy, don't forget that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. It'll be a while to make that transition. I got there.
Oh,
the daily fantasy sports destination of DraftKings. You can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to play for free today. Also, our folks upstairs had a kind request that I will be happy to fulfill. Give a little promotion to our Taste of the Giants event. We've been doing this for about, I don't know, 5-6 years now. It's really a great event. It's on November 9th from 6 to 9 p.m. You can join current and former players at Taste of the Giants, presented by Stop and Shop, an evening of fine cuisine from the area's top chefs. Again, it's Monday, November 9th from 6 to 9 p.m. Tickets are on sale now. Visit Giants.com/taste for more information. That's Giants.com/taste for more information. You go, you pay to get in, and you can basically eat from any of these multiple stations and tables from these great restaurants that all have tables here. And it's a fantastic event. You can get really fat really fast, but the food's excellent. You have a good time. So, again, it's Giants.com/taste. Now, the business is through. We'll have to go through Fiegel's picks later in the game, later in the show. Let's go to our phones. And Abdul in Minneapolis, as usual, is in early. Abdul, what's going on? How are you?
Good, I think. I waited a day to kind of, you know, calm myself after what happened on Sunday. And I've been on this, you know, pendulum going back and forth about, you know, our terrible, our defense can't stop anyone, you know, we're embarrassing, to, hey, you know, we're getting back Beattie, Cruz, JPP, we're still in first place, you know, we're getting healthy at the right time of year. So I keep swinging back and forth.
It's all about perspective, Abdul. It's all about perspective.
Exactly. The one thing that I keep landing on is, and I'm reading different articles, you know, just from different writers and prognosticators, and the one thing that I keep reading over and over and over again is the Giants have a lack of talent. The Giants have a lack of depth. I've read 6 or 7 different people saying that, right? And that leads me to who's responsible for that. And it's been a running commentary for the past 5 years. The Giants have a lack of talent. The Giants have a lack of depth. And, you know, and I'm not going to say get rid of Reese or whatever, but I think the Giants need to do an internal audit and figure out why on defense, especially, we are missing the ball so badly.
Well, Abdul,
you know,
I mean, if you listen to John Mara's press conference at the end of last year, I'm going to go back to what John Mara said. And if you want to, you know, put your finger on why maybe the depth isn't where you want it to be and things of that nature, is that, you know, you had a period of a couple drafts in the 2010 to 2011 area where you didn't get the number of players contributing that you would have liked.
And that
will affect you long term than down the road, especially in terms of depth. So I'm just going back to what the owner said, and I think that's a part of it. And again, I know fans don't like to listen to this, Abdul, but I think injuries have been an issue too, and they've really hit this team hard from time to time as well.
After this weekend, seeing everyone going down in injuries, it's sickening. You know, from the guy from Chicago to Bell, you know, everyone gets hurt. You know, so that's a given. You know, that's part of the NFL. That's the price of doing business in the NFL. I get that, but it's the fact that we went into this year with only Prince and DRC as being legitimate cornerbacks.
Jermaine McBride's
had experience on this team, though.
Jermaine McBride's a legitimate corner.
Okay, in this league, how many cornerbacks do you need? You need at least three starting.
Shockey Brown was a legitimate cornerback. He hurt his knee in the preseason, and the season ended.
And you had Walter Thurman last season, and then he went down in the second game of the year,
with a knee injury, absolutely.
So last year they had three, you can argue, but injuries cost them in that department as well.
Yeah. Well, and look, I just think that also our linebacker play has, since Pierce, we haven't had a decent linebacker. And don't give me Beeson. Beeson is good for maybe four games a year.
How about Devon Kennard?
Okay, what about Devon Kennard? He's a decent player, but where was he this week? We give him 500 yards of offense, and he was on the field.
I mean, Devon Kennard's not covering Brandon Cooks or Willie Snead.
No, but I'm saying we need more. You know, we need more. I guess I'm just very frustrated. I said I've been on this emotional pendulum, and it seems like I'm in this kind of Groundhog Day that whenever I wake up, the past 5 years, we've had the same defense. You know, with different coaches, different players, different whatever. But the end of the year, it's always Giants defense. Giants defense. We can't make stops. We can't stop the run. We can't get off the field. And it's been like a Groundhog Day, you know, for the past 5 years. You know, and it's like the same thing over and over and over again. And I'm not sure what the answer is. You know, at this point, I don't know. Because we've tried free agency. We've tried, you know, we've done, you know, I'm not saying there hasn't been a lack of effort to fix the ship. I'm not saying that.
Right.
But, it hasn't worked. So that's what I'm thinking. You know, an internal audit. Maybe we are the wrong people making the decisions. We are the wrong people saying, let's get that guy. Because these guys aren't working.
Thank you for the call, Abdul. We appreciate it.
Finish up.
Sorry about that.
Okay. By the way, I guarantee you the next five phone calls are going to be about the Giants not trading for someone. So I'll be
able to have fun with that. Absolutely. All right,
after the Broncos traded for the guy from the tight end from 49ers, I saw that. I'm like, are you guys going to get killed by phone calls today? Anyway,
all right, Abdul.
All right.
Appreciate the phone call.
Appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Now, we missed him last week, and I want to make sure I get to him now, Dave. Line three, our buddy Jason all the way out in Denmark. We just missed him getting him on last year. We lost his call, but I wanted to get to him early today. Jason, what's up, pal?
Hey, what's going on, John? How are you?
I'm doing great, Jason. Thanks for calling in. How's lovely Denmark?
Oh, it's doing good. This is actually Jason from California that moved to Denmark.
Oh, Jason. Now, what are you doing out in Denmark, Jason?
My family's it's Danish, so trying to find a life and trying to find some Giants fans out here in Denmark.
Now, are you in a big city in Denmark? Are you guys out like in the countryside? Where are you at?
We're in the middle island, Onse. It's about an hour from Copenhagen.
Sounds lovely.
So, Jason, how do you watch the Giants every week? What do you go to, the local bar?
I go
internet?
To the game pass. Which didn't work for me this weekend, which really sucked. But so I didn't get to see the high end offense going crazy.
You know, one other thing
I didn't get to see the defense either.
Jason, one other thing you go look into it. I'm not sure if it's going to work overseas, but this is my public service announcement to you. I'm not getting paid by anybody for this, but DirecTV actually offers a digital app where it's less than what their season subscription is, and you can stream not every game, but most of the games online. So I would look into the DirecTV app and their mobile digital service. I'm not sure if that'll work overseas, but it's definitely worth a look for you.
Yeah, y'all missed me last week because my Skype minutes ran out.
No worries, Jason. All right, let's talk some Giants. What do you got?
Okay, my question this week is basically which team have made it to the playoffs with lack of a pass rush, because we don't have a pass rush right now, and I'm crossing my fingers that JPP does something when he comes back, or we get someone to do something.
Jason, it's actually...
At the same time, I want to know if there's a team that has went all the way with no pass rush.
Well, all the way to win the Super Bowl, I'm not sure if I can pick a team off the top of my head. I could tell you last year, two teams that jump out at me right away that had no pass rush and made it to the playoffs and actually won games in the playoffs. One is the Indianapolis Colts. The other are the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys couldn't rush the passer for anything last year, but they were good enough elsewhere where they still won the division, won 12 games, and got to the postseason. So it can be done.
Right, I'm not going to bombard y'all with the question about Vernon Davis, because I know Charlie is going to be on sooner or later screaming about that. But, yeah, good show, and I'll try to call in when I can from all the way out here, like 6 o'clock in the afternoon, to get to your show, but... Hey, I'm willing to do it.
Well, appreciate the sacrifice, Jason. Thanks so much for trying.
We've expanded the pull of Big Blue Kickoff Live, and Jason, thanks for checking in. And this is the good use of Skype. That's why Skype is what it is. Where, you know, it's great to hear from you. And now this is another country we can check off the list.
Oh, that's the beauty of technology, especially in this day and age when it comes to the NFL.
I'm taking a look at the team stats last year. Let me see if I can pull out. I don't think the Colts had a good pass rush last year. I know their defense was terrible. I kind of assumed that they didn't have a good pass rush, but let me double check.
Well, they had some
that.
Injuries to their defensive line.
Well, I know Dallas had a bad pass rush last year. That I know.
Dallas only had about 26 sacks.
Oh, they were terrible.
Yeah.
Let's see. Last year's sacks in the regular season. I'm going to go to the bottom of the list. Okay, here are the teams on the bottom of the list in terms of sacks. Cincinnati Bengals. They just missed the playoffs last year, right?
No, the Bengals made it. Geno Atkins got banged up, though.
Oh, that's right. And that's why they struggled in the year.
That's
the
why
Bengals
they struggled on the
had
pass
20
rush.
Sacks, fewest in the league.
Yeah.
They were in the postseason. Did the Chargers get into the playoffs last year?
Chargers did not make
they
the
did
playoffs.
They did not. No. All right, they had 26. They were fourth fewest. Cowboys were fifth fewest. They only had 28. The Steelers, they did not get in last year, correct?
No.
The Arizona Cardinals
got
in the playoffs last year. They had just 36 sacks. That was 24th in the NFL. And, dude, the Seattle Seahawks were the 20th-ranked team in terms of sacks last year, which was just 37. So, again, those are sack totals in terms of quarterback hurries and quarterback hits. I don't have those numbers. I could probably find them somewhere. But in terms of sacks, I listed four or five teams that had excellent records last year, got into the playoffs, lower last 12 teams in the league in terms of pass rush. So it can happen. You can do it. You just got to be better elsewhere.
Well, that's why I also say sacks, to me, is not the only statistic that you should look for to determine the success of a team. I think quarterback hits, hurries, and so forth is a better range of numbers that dictate how effective your pass rush is. You know, turnover differential certainly is another statistic that I think also has a big say in whether or not you get into the postseason. If you look at some of the teams that got in, very few were in the negative if we were to bring up those numbers too. I mean, when you look at the Giants, they're number one right now. That doesn't mean that you automatically get into the postseason, but it certainly can help cover up and disappear some other issues.
Right. Here's one for you, all right? 2014 regular season, this is Pro Football Focus, so it's just another metric that you use, and they rank and they grade teams' pass rushes based on the season, and that includes hurries.
They take
rushes
into consideration a variety
of different
stats. They
do all that,
stats.
Exactly. The Bengals were still the worst pass rushing team in the league last year, according to them, by far, by the way. Cardinals was the second worst.
That's another playoff
and
team.
Colts were the third worst.
That's three playoff teams right there.
They actually have... The Cowboys ranked higher. They have them in the middle of the pack in terms of pass rush last year.
Well,
I guess
they
must have gotten a lot
more efficient
pressures
in
and hits,
and,
but not a lot of sacks. The Giants, they had right next to Dallas in the middle of the pack last year. So the three worst graded pass rush teams last year made the playoffs.
Yeah.
So it's possible. You can do it.
Well, think about it. You know, Dallas had great time of possession numbers last season, John. So when you keep your offense on the field, you could cover up the lack of the pass rush. Cincinnati had a balanced offense, even though they did lose a lot of players on defense. So that helps cover that up. You know, Carson Palmer, before he went down, ran a very efficient Cardinals offense. That also made up for some of the injuries that they suffered on defense. So, you know, if you don't have strength in one area, you have to make up for it in another area. And if you look at the Giants, just to use them as an example here this season, the fact that they're in first place in the division, and granted it's only a 500 record, but turnover differential, John, has done wonders for some of the weaknesses in the other areas, such as the lack of a pass rush and giving up a lot of big plays through the air and on the ground in recent weeks. You take away the football, then it doesn't come back to haunt you in terms of those other areas. Can this be maintained? Who knows? I mean, right now the Giants have been pretty consistent in terms of takeaways. So they're averaging about 2 per game. The numbers have shown some consistency. Will it continue in the second half of the season? That remains to be seen. But if they keep that up, you know, that's a way that you can cover up some of your other issues in other facets of your team.
Abdul seems to have spurred a conversation online here quickly. So one tweet I want to point out from at Andy and Ken, just pointing out the last two drafts, Landon Collins starter, Eric Flower starter, Weston Richburg starter, Beckham obviously a starter, and Devon Kennard a starter. So those are some pretty quick returns from the last couple of drafts. You go back to the draft before, you have Justin Pugh in the mix. So, you know, the last couple of drafts, there have been some very, very, very good players that have come in here to help this team.
Was Hankins mentioned in that group?
Hankins was 4 years ago,
okay.
Right? Or 3 years ago?
Well, he was in 13. Right. I mean, I would.
And so was Pugh.
Yeah, I mean, I would throw him in there, too.
You can add Pugh and Hankins into that mix,
yeah,
too.
You
absolutely
can't overlook
no
Hankins.
No question about it. 201. And Hankins is probably the second best player of that group after Beckham, to be quite honest with you.
No argument.
I mean,
Jonathan
Hankins is an excellent, excellent football player. He's really good.
Yeah, and he doesn't get enough credit.
He hasn't gotten the sacks this year that he had last year, but in terms of his run, ability to stop the run and then collapse that pocket, he's excellent. 201-939-4513. Jeff in New Hampshire. Jeff, what's going on?
You guys doing?
Doing well, Jeff.
Doing
how
well,
are
Jeff.
You, pal?
What's happening?
Well, I had no intention of talking about the trade deadline, but between John's intro and then the first caller, I almost feel like I'm obligated.
No, don't feel obligated, Jeff. Please, don't feel obligated.
No, you'll agree. The only thing I'll say about the trade deadline is if you look at the teams that typically make a big move at the trade deadline, they're the same teams that make headlines in the offseason with, you know, lots of big-name signings and the big splash that everybody wants. They're the bottom-of-the-barrel teams. They're the franchises that have that are a mess. They're the same kind of teams that are firing head coaches in the middle of the season. If we have to do something like that, we're not the kind of franchise we want to be. So if anybody out there thinks that trading for any one player right now is going to take us from 4-4 to the Super Bowl, there's a lot about football I guess you don't understand. So,
now, Jeff, I agree with you in terms of a big splash. I think you're right. You know, if you the last big, like super big trade deadline trade I can remember, boy, is it the Roy Williams Lions Cowboys trade where they traded the two ones for Roy Williams? Is that the last big trade deadline trade that involved like a superstar that I can remember?
I agree,
Jeff. If you make a deal like that, that reeks of being desperate, and I don't think that's a good way to win football games. I agree. But I do think there are some small things you can do here to tweak. We've seen the Patriots make some moves here around the trade deadline to kind of tweak their roster and balance it out. So if a move like that becomes available, there's nothing
wrong with
that.
But those are more complete teams than where we are now. Like, and even like Denver making the trade they made.
Right.
They're in a different situation than we are. They've been in the playoffs the last 3 years. Peyton maybe has a year left, if nothing. I mean, this is win now or else. You know, we're in a totally different state than those teams are. So, yeah, I don't think that's where we need to go. If the right deal's there, great. But if not, I'm more interested in getting Beatty, Cruz, JPP, and Amukamara back. That's bigger than any trade we could make. If we
well, and that's
healthy.
The equivalent, Jeff, as I've been saying for weeks, of a trade deadline deal. You're getting players that are currently on the roster back because they haven't been healthy. So very few teams can bring back an offensive lineman who's a starter, a defensive lineman who's a starter, a wide receiver who's a starter. I mean, you're not going to dig into your depth chart and bring that caliber of a player back this point of the season.
Those are four franchise players right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
That's huge. So my thought from the Saints game, without stating the obvious, obviously the defense didn't play that well, and that's where everybody's looking. My one thought about the defense, I remember in the fourth quarter screaming at the TV, if we could get one stop, one big play out of our defense after this horrendous showing, we're going to win this game. And then we got it. We got the pick six. Said, now, okay, now we're going to win this game. I just felt we had it. You know, even if the Saints came back to tie it up, we got enough time to get a field goal, win the game. No big deal. Once the defense, as horrible as they played, they stepped up and made a play that we needed. And then it turns around and special teams ends up giving it away. And I remember what Fiegels was saying yesterday, and I completely agree. You never want to place a loss on one play in a game that has, you know, 80 plays a game. I say that all the time. I live in New England. I'm surrounded by Patriots fans. They say we only beat them because of one lucky catch. And I always say there was 80 plays in that game. You should have made a play earlier in the game. It never comes down to one play in a football game. But in this case, with special teams, we talk about special teams on this show a lot. That's the difference maker in an evenly matched game. You go back to the NFC Championship game with San Francisco a few years ago. Game was a stalemate. It was an even game. It was a dead defensive battle. Stalemate, even match team. A defensive turnover is what ended up letting us win the game. This past Sunday, it was an offensive shootout, but two evenly matched teams. The mistake on special teams, that was the game changer. And unfortunately, that was the difference maker this week, which is a shame because we made a big effort to improve special teams this offseason, and it's paid off. Our special teams has been great. But what I'm really seeing, whether it's the offense, the defense, or the special teams, seems like every week one unit has a really good game and another unit lets us down, or two units have a good game and the third unit lets us down. We haven't seen a game where all three units play a solid game the whole game. The offense will have a great game like Sunday, and the defense doesn't show up. Special teams makes a mistake. We had games this year where the defense has played great, and the offense didn't show up, or the special teams makes another mistake. We can't seem to get all three phases to play a full 60-minute game.
You're right.
And I think that's the difference. I mean, it's easy to say, yeah, the defense played terrible, but you know what? New Orleans defense played terrible too, but it was just the one letdown at the end. We for whatever reason, two out of three units will have a good game, and one will make a mistake. And maybe it was fatigue. I know we had guys injured. We didn't have all our best players out on that punt or, you know, whatever the issue was. But for whatever reason, we can't seem to get all three on the same page. And being optimistic, I'm hoping that after the, you know, we can get through the bye without any more serious injuries and get those rest of those guys back healthy and try and go on a run here down the end. Because we can see that the potential is there, even with how bad the defense plays at times. The potential is there. We've had good moments. They make big plays. For as much as they give up, look how many turnovers we're getting. We're making plays and getting Prince back, getting JPP or whatever percentage of his ability we're going to get him at. You can add Beatty and get the offense clicking. There's still a chance. I mean, the season's far from lost, and as disappointing as it was Sunday, you can see the potential there. If we can just get everybody there and put it all together from all three units for 60 minutes, we're not that far away right now, hopefully.
Well, and this division is wide open, Jeff, too, and appreciate the call. So,
no,
I mean,
absolutely.
You have to take that into consideration. Nobody's pulling away in this division.
Hey, look, and the way the defense has had the, you know, limited of effectiveness they had, because going into the Saints game, they were near the bottom of the league in terms of yards allowed, but in terms of points allowed, they were in the middle of the league. They were actually around league average, if I'm not mistaken. I think they were on 18th in terms of scoring defense.
I think they were in 14th,
game, right?
To be honest. 14th? But they dropped 10 spots as a result
well,
of
right.
this game.
Like I said, but the difference between the game against the Saints and the games before the year, there were two things to me. One, obviously, you only got the two takeaways, and you've been getting more than that for a couple of the games this year. But, you know, when you're playing a better quarterback, you're not going to get the same number of takeaways. And we knew that going, and we talked about that last week. The other thing is that the Giants have been able from time to time to be the bend but don't break defense, where they haven't allowed as many big plays as they have the last few years. Not as many plays over 20 yards, over 40 yards. That changed against the Saints, which was a problem, especially earlier in that game. You had the big play to Willie Snead, the big play to Marcus Colston. And then, frankly, they should have had another big play to
Brandon Cooks,
but Breeze overthrew him.
Yeah.
How long of a play was the Cooks slant pattern that went for the touchdown? Was that over 30?
It might have
been,
right?
It was probably around 30
yeah.
yards. Anyway, the point being is that they gave him way too many big plays, which goes against that bend but don't break philosophy. And the second problem they had, Lance, and this is connected to the big play thing as well, there was a 21-yard pass from Breeze to 21 yards from Breeze to Cooks, by the way.
Well, he had multiple throws to Cooks, though. I don't know. Was that the one?
Let's see.
That was one for the score?
That's a good point. They had one for 26 yards, one for 21.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Because he hit him in the corner.
26 was
the
slant. 21 was the beautiful pass over the shoulder.
Right over two defenders.
That was
a
great pass.
Yeah.
But the second thing, they didn't do a good job of keeping the Saints out of the end zone and forcing field goals. And, you know, from time to time, their red zone defense has been better this year. Now, the trick is that, you know, the Saints scored a lot of their points from outside the red zone.
Because of the big plays.
I mean, Watson's play was technically in the red zone. It was a 20-yard catch. So that was technically a red zone. Spiller was a 9-yard pass and Breeze. That was the red zone.
They had two red zone
and
opportunities.
And then Willie Snead was a 2-yard pass. So they had three red zone opportunities.
Well, it's interesting. I looked at the box score the other day. They had him down for 2 for 2.
Well, is it only inside the 20 for red zone? If the ball is at the 20, maybe if it's at the 20, it's not considered.
It depends on who's scoring the game, to be honest with you.
You could be right. I don't know. Either way, there are three scores that were within 20 yards. It was a 20-yard pass to Watson. They had the 2-yard pass to Snead. And then they had the 9-yard pass to Spiller. Those are three touchdowns. 20 yards and in, but maybe the red zone is only inside the 20. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure that it may be, at least for this classification, just inside the 20. And I'm bringing up the box score. I looked at it yesterday because the Giants were 4-for-4 in the red zone, and then the Saints were listed as 2-for-2. Now, you know, they sometimes make some scoring tweaks, so I'm just double-checking. But let's take a look here. Yeah, I've got the Giants 4-for-4 in the red zone, the Saints 2-for-2.
So I guess you have to be inside the 20 then. You learn something new every day.
There you go.
I didn't know that. I thought it was 20 and in. Anyway, but to me, those are the two big problems with the Giants defense against the Saints. The big plays, which were a killer, and then you had an inability to keep the Saints out of the end zone, in the red zone, and hold them to field goals. And those are two things the Giants defense, you know, for all the issues that they have, guys, and we're not trying to tell you this is going to be a top five defense here, that those are two things that they've done well that's limited the damages. Despite the fact they gave up 460 yards to the Cowboys, they still held them to a reasonable number of points. That's they're able to win the game. The things that allowed them to do that, poof, went vanished and disappeared against the Saints, and that's why they gave up 52.
Well, and going back to this defensive discussion that we're right now hammering home here, John, the last caller, Jeff, who I thought brought up a number of good points, was saying, you know, usually he doesn't like a game to come down to one play, but you can't overlook that in a game that was evenly matched. You focus on the special teams penalty, but, you know, I still go back to that last Saints drive, John. I mean, the Saints had a 4th-and-1, they had a 3rd-and-7, they had a 3rd-and-5. I mean, a defensive stop here perhaps changes the outcome of this contest if you hold them to a field goal or, you know,
Saints
you force
7
them.
Of 11 on third down.
Yeah.
Giants
so,
only 1 of 8, by the way.
I can't overlook the defensive numbers in some of the breakdowns in this game and all of a sudden just steer my focus to that special teams penalty.
No, of
I'm still
not.
Very much taking into consideration opportunity. You're up by a score here. All you need to do is keep the Saints out of the end zone. I can't just neglect and overlook that
folks,
drive.
We're not exactly breaking, you know, records of analysis here. The team gave up 52 points. I mean, to blame a special teams penalty at the end of the game is ludicrous.
Yeah, well,
ludicrous.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I still think you have to go back to the defense. And it came down to, yes, a special teams play in crunch time deciding the outcome of the game. But you know, the defense, there were opportunities. And I brought this up yesterday with Jeff and I, John. Think about the starting field position for the Saints in this contest. They had to go 80, 90 yards about every single
Josh
drive.
Josh Brown was kicking it out of the end zone.
Josh
every
Brown
time.
Did a great job.
Oh, absolutely.
It wasn't as if the Giants were giving the Saints gifts at the 40-yard line. They had one drive that started at the 40. They had one drive that started in Giants territory. That was it, prior to, obviously, the last play in which they got the field goal because the penalty put them in Giants territory.
Here were the Saints,
that was it.
Here were the Saints scoring drives. All right? I'll list them for you. What do they have the total yards on these drives? 80, 91, 80. 75, 70, 80, 85, and 43. And 43 was actually the one that was the fumble interception return. So their scoring drives were all 70 yards or longer. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 were 80 yards or longer. So a lot of chances to get off the field there, and they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And look, look, no one's going to tell you the defense doesn't have to play better. They got to play better. And you hope that they can, you know, getting some of these guys back will help them. You hope Prince will help them. You hope whatever JPP can give him can help them. You hope whatever Beeson can give you can help them. Is it going to be an all cure? No. But look, guys, going into this year, when we broke down this team, we talked about it in the offseason, Lance. This team was going to have to get carried by the offense. They were going to have to score 27 or so points a game if the Giants were going to be a playoff team. You know, no one expected this defense to come out and hold teams to 10, 13, 14 points, 17 points in a game. You know, a lot of the resources in the offseason were put into the offense. They drafted an offensive lineman again. You know, Beckham was the first-round pick the year before. The resources have been put into the offense. And the offense is going to have to – Shane Vereen, another one, big free agent signing. Dwayne Harris, special teams player, offensive player. So a lot of the resources were put into the offense here. They're going to have to really carry the load. And look, they carried a real hell of a load on Sunday. They did a good job. But the defense really fell apart on them, really fell apart. So, you know, you hope the defense can just hold the line. You're not expecting them to, you know, work miracles here. You hold the line. You get a couple takeaways in a game. You know, you keep a team in the low to mid-20s, and you hope the offense can do what it needs to do to score enough points to win the game. And that's what I think most of these games are going to come down to.
Well, and that's why this game was out of character compared to what we saw out of the defense. And you brought up a number of these points, John. You know, they've been consistent in terms of getting takeaways. They've been consistent at times in at least making stops when they needed, even if it's in the form of a takeaway. The difference with this Saints game compared to the others, you weren't keeping the opponent out of the end zone, you weren't getting the critical stops, and you weren't getting to the quarterback. So when you have all three of those things pile up, even one or two takeaways is not going to cover up those issues, John.
No, it's not. You're absolutely right. 201-939-4513. Drew in Virginia. Drew, what's going on, pal? Thanks for waiting.
Hey, John. Hey, Lance. How you guys doing, man?
Hello, Drew. How are you?
First and foremost, man, let's go back to this game, what we're talking about, the play that lost the game. I agree that, you know, overall it's everything that you do in the game, okay? I do agree with that. However, I also look at, okay, this is what happened in the past. Now we got to move on. From that standpoint, we was in that game, all right, and special teams is the one that blew the game. Yes, there isn't a fan out here that's going to tell you that this defense wasn't responsible for the loss as well. We all understand that. At the end of the day, when all of that was said and done, when it was 49-49, it was the special teams that
Yeah, but you're hold on a second. Hold on a second. Even there if this game goes to overtime and the Saints win the coin toss, there's a chance that you lose the game anyway. And two, if you want to play this game, then blame the offense for going three and out and giving the ball back to the Saints at all.
We understand all of that, but again, we're talking of the here and now, and the here and now is that game was decided on special teams.
The game was decided because your defense gave up 52 points.
It was 49-49, and the game was decided on the special teams play.
52 points! Drew Brees threw 7 touchdowns and threw for 500 yards! How are you going to say they lost because of the special teams?
Because both teams gave up. Because again, you know, again, you're not hearing me. Both teams gave up a ton of points. Both teams had horrendous you already know I'm not a fan of this defense. Both teams had horrendous defenses. We all knew that our defense was going to roll over and give up the touchdown, the tying touchdown, and that's what they did.
No, but you, I hear you. I hear you, but this is an everyday bad here. This is 614 yards bad.
We understand that. Lance, I'm not going to argue with you on that. I promise
Lance,
you.
Stop by.
I agree with you, what you're saying. Okay, I hear you guys. At the end of the day, when everything was said and done, the game was tied. Let's start from there.
All right, move on, Drew. Move on. What else you got for us?
Right. So with that said, okay, and you know, a caller called in yesterday named Dave, and he actually brought up, I thought was a good point, and this was concerning timeouts. Now, here's what I'm saying. I'm going to tell you right now, it is against conventional wisdom. I understand that. It's against conventional wisdom. But here's why, okay? When I'm looking at this game, right, and I think it was like 4 minutes or something left in the game, or 3 minutes, and Drew Brees and the boys was driving down for that go-ahead touchdown, I was kind of thinking about, you know what, maybe we should call some timeout. But then again, like I said, I'm like, nah, we don't want to do that. That's against conventional wisdom. But then, you know, after I listened to this call yesterday and everything, I was rethinking about it. I was like, you know what, maybe we should have called a timeout. Here's why. And again, yes, it is against conventional wisdom. And 6 weeks, 7 weeks, we have seen this Giants team time and time and time and time and time again give up plays at the end of the game. We can't stop anybody. So my thought then is, you know what, maybe I should start saving some time for us to you know, move the ball. Because the Saints, on the other hand, couldn't stop our defense. Couldn't stop our offense either. And I'm quite sure Sean Payton and boys were scared to death that the Giants would get the ball last. Just like we were scared to death of the Saints, Sean Payton and boys were scared to death of the Giants. So my thought process is maybe we should have called some timeouts, seeing how horrendous this defense is. I know it's saying, well, I don't trust my defense and everything else. But you know what? Reality is reality, and we've seen this play 7 weeks in a row.
Well, and Drew, I don't mean to cut you off. I'll let you continue. And I brought this up yesterday. I remember the exact phone call. 36 seconds, 3 timeouts. You go 3 and out, though. So, you know, nobody seems to be able to counter the argument with the Giants still had an opportunity. They went 3 and out. So what are you going to do with these timeouts now? You couldn't even pick up the first down.
you know, we again, hindsight being, that's why, you know, today is Tuesday. The game was Sunday. We understand all of that. But I'm just saying, you know, you don't know a lot of things until they happen, okay? Maybe if there's a little bit more time, maybe the offense doesn't feel rushed or whatever. You know, there's always the what-ifs and this and that and everything else. I'm just saying, I'm just making the argument that maybe, and I'm not, first and foremost, I'm not going to criticize Tom Coughlin over his lack of calling timeouts or whatever. You know, that's, you know, conventional wisdom. You don't do those things. I get it. But I'm just saying, with this defense running the way it's been running and giving up play after play after play, and you obviously saw in the game that the defense wasn't stopping anything, maybe you go against conventional wisdom. That's what my argument is.
All right, Drew. Appreciate the call, my friend. We got to run. And you know what? Honestly, during that time, I actually said to Bob and Carl in their heads that I wasn't stating my opinion during the radio broadcast. I simply said, guys, do you want to discuss here whether or not you should call a timeout if you're the Giants to try to save some time? Because I thought it was something they would at least think about. I'm sure they had the conversation on the sideline. And Bob and Carl both of the opinion, no, you worry about getting the stop, then you figure it out.
I agree.
So.
I agree with that philosophy. Again, Worst case scenario, you go to overtime.
Now, again, I don't think it's out of the question to call a timeout there. I could see why you would think about it, but no, I don't think it's an egregious move not calling timeout there. I could see, let me put it this way, I could see the strategy either way. I would have gone the same way the Giants did, like you would have, because you have the faith that even if you get the ball back with 30 seconds, you can, with those
with
timeouts.
Three timeouts, with the way Manning was throwing the football, plus, John,
and
you only have to get into field goal range.
Exactly.
You don't have to go 80 yards to get a touchdown. I don't disagree with the way they approached those last 30 seconds. I mean, I understand the arguments that the callers have brought up, and I don't think that they're stretching it. I felt completely comfortable with how the end of this game played out. It goes back to the defense being on the field, taking advantage of an opportunity to make a stop, and that unfortunately did not come to fruition.
All right, back to the calls, 201-939-4513. Victor in Texas. Victor, how are you, pal?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How y'all doing?
Doing great,
on,
Victor.
Vic.
How are you, pal?
What's happening?
Hey, good, man. Sorry I missed y'all for a while, man. I've been in the process of getting some things done for my own little show, so just can't wait for that to happen.
It'll be the Victor versus Shakes showdown.
Yeah. Wow, should Shakes be concerned, Victor? You got now your own podcast?
I don't know, man. We'll see. We'll see.
I'm
a lot of people clamoring. Hope to have you be my first guest, one of you guys.
I'd be happy to, Victor. What's up?
Hey, appreciate that. Looking at this Giants team, there's three things I like to talk about, you know, offense, defense, and situational football. Offensively, I don't want Giants fans to look at this game and think that, you know, we're going to be going up and down the field on teams. Obviously, the Saints are the 31st ranked defense in the National Football League, and only people that lead them is us. We're 32 ranked in the league. Obviously, the defenses weren't on the field doing anything. But what I was happy about, and I was able to see, the fact that Ben McAdoo was able to get Harris involved in the game and get the ball to Odell Beckham Jr. by moving the pocket with Eli in it. Because the offensive line, and let's get to that, the offensive line, we all know, has a lot of problems. I mean, we got some guys on there. You got John Jerry. You got Marshall Newhouse. These guys aren't the top-tier offensive lineman on that team. But what we did that game, it was a miracle that Eli didn't just, you know, get hurt, because those guys were very, very bad. The running game, I like New Orleans Darkwa.
Yeah.
The guy is he's a really good hammer, and I think we should get him in the game more. I mean, granted, Jennings is our power guy, but I like Darkwa.
Victor, the problem in the game on Sunday is that they would have used Darkwa more. He left the game with a back injury in the second quarter, and that's why he didn't play in the second half.
Oh, man, I didn't really see that. I apologize for that.
No worries.
But offensively, I mean, we were looking pretty good. I like how we got Shane Vereen involved in the game, and Eli was throwing the ball. I mean, he was really throwing the ball. One thing that we lacked out there was tight end play. Defensively, guys, the defense is very young. I mean, we got guys in our secondary very young. We also got guys that are out. You got Prince that's out. We don't have leaders, I would say, on the defensive line. I mean, we got some leaders, but we don't have guys like a Strahan, Tuck, OC guys. Like back in the days, we had those leaders. You got guys in there like Jonathan Hankins, DeMontre Moore, whenever he's not making mistakes, getting up on this defensive line and having to be those leaders. And I know we got Cullen Jenkins there, but, you know, he's one guy. And if Jason Pierre-Paul comes back, that's got to be a plus for us. But I don't want Giant fans to think that him coming back is going to solve all of our issues. It's not. I mean, defensively in the backfield, we are lacking some and we're lacking in communication. If you look at those plays, Brandon Merriweather, Landon Collins got caught out of position. I mean, you let a 40-year-old, I know I'm exaggerating, Marcus Colston basically walk down the middle of the field. There's got to be an issue with communication there. And that's just going to come over time with those guys playing together. I don't think Jason Pierre-Paul coming back is going to basically say, hey, boom, our defense is fixed, but maybe it'll give them a boost. But these guys online have to up their play to JPP's play. You understand what I'm saying? They got to be able to reach that same playing level as him, you know, or play up to that level. And the last thing I want to talk about is situational football. Bill Belichick's probably the best coach in NFL history with situational football. He puts his players in the position. He knows, he practices plays that players probably going to have themselves in the game before they even see it. So it's something new to it's not nothing new to them. What I don't see with this Giants team is situational awareness in the game. You have about 30 seconds left or 20 seconds left, and I know that the special team didn't cause a loss, John, but why don't you kick that ball out of bounds? It was reminiscent of Matt Dodge kicking to DeSean Jackson.
I talked about it earlier in the show, and I guess you hadn't tuned in yet, and this is why kicking out of bounds to me isn't a simple solution. If you could just tell the kicker, well, kick it 40 yards out of bounds and everything is going to be all right, he would do that on every single play. You'll take a 40-yard net with no chance of a return on every single punt that you have during a game. So that's not the case. If you tell a kid to go kick it out of bounds, you run a risk. Look what happened when the Giants played the Eagles and Darren Sproles, you know, a couple weeks ago. And you told the kid either kick it really high or kick it out of bounds. He had some really poor kicks. And you're going to risk kicking it out of bounds 30 yards, only 6 or 7 seconds go off the clock. Then the Saints have the ball near midfield with 13 seconds and a timeout. And then they're only a pass away from getting into field goal range. So I think that's why kicking it out of bounds isn't quite the easy answer that a lot of people think it is.
And Victor, real quickly, just to add to that before we let you continue, you know, number one, Brad Wing's still a very young punter.
Right.
He doesn't have nearly as much experience in the NFL. And, you know, Jeff Fiegels, when he was on yesterday, and Jeff's one of the most experienced punters in NFL history, Jeff said on air, John, it took him nearly 10 years before he could actually kick it out of bounds consistently, where he felt confident.
10 years?
Yeah. It took him about 10 years. Half his career in, then he felt good about consistently being called upon to kick it out of bounds. It's not as easy as everybody makes it out to be. And this is coming from Jeff Fiegels. This is not coming from me. When a veteran punter who's played this game for 22 years says that, I'm going to take his word more so than anybody
else. And by
else.
The way, Wing's punt still went outside the numbers. Yeah. It's not like it was down the middle of the field.
Well, no doubt, guys. I mean, I'm not saying special teams is to blame for that. But I'm just talking about situational awareness. I mean, as far as timeouts, as far as converting on third down, the Giants were 1 for 8 on third down yesterday. 1 for 8. And the Saints were 7 for like 10 or 12 or something like that.
I
couldn't believe that stat. I could not believe that stat. So it's everything involved in situational awareness, whether it's defensive situational awareness where you know you don't have to get a personal foul, or third down, not throwing deep when you got to go 3 yards to get a first down, or just call a timeout, give your defense the time to rest. You know they're winded. Drew Brees is going with that hurry up. I mean, just situational awareness in the game itself. I'm not telling it like special teams are the cause, but overall in general, I just want this team to have better situational awareness on the field. And we'll see what happens in this next game and see if they learn from it. I mean,
must
this
win.
Is something that they need to build on.
Must-win game, Victor. We appreciate the call,
bud.
Thanks for checking in.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate
you got it.
Hey, look, you got the Patriots in 2 weeks. We know how tough that's going to be. You got to go down there and you got to beat the Bucs. This is not as important as Dallas last week, but it's darn close. It's a really important game. All right, we got only a few minutes left. I got two calls. I need to get you in. Don't forget, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you would, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to claim your free entry today. I'm going to have to ask you guys to be pretty quick here. Let's go to Scott in the Bronx first. Scott, what do you got?
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, Scott.
First, I'd like to make a statement and ask you guys a question.
Sure.
My statement is, or my comment here is that if there's an MVP on the team for the offense, defense, or the players there, scratch that. It should be Tom Coughlin, the coaching staff. I think they've done a spectacular job with the talent level they have, which everyone's trying hard, and he keeps everyone in tune and keeps them pumped day in and week out. I think Coughlin right now is the top candidate for Coach of the Year. based on the material, and I say material, the talent level he has there.
No, look, Scott, and I think if you look at it this way, if you look at where this team is ranked in a lot of categories, and then you look at their record, you're impressed that their record is probably better than what those rankings would suggest, and I agree. I think that has a lot to do with the coaching.
Well, the other item, real quickly, because I know it's pressed for time here, I'm hoping it's already passed. We spoke once at the time before, John, about the offensive line and what their draft picks and everything else. I'm still saying that the one thing I hope the Giants will learn from this is that moving forward with the front office is that when they got to work on a development like the Cowboys bit the bullet and they got the three number one draft picks and still worked on the offensive line afterwards to solidify it, to bring back the really needed pounding offensive line, I hope we can do that as a team. I don't know what you feel on that. Were there some good draft picks? Yes, there were. But I also feel there was some things that fell to the cracks there. The two journey people they have on the team, they're giving their best. But again, as the previous caller said, they're not the top tiers or the tier levels they have. And Will Beattie is a good offensive lineman, but I don't consider him a great offensive lineman. Will he help? Yes, I hope he can make the adjustment when he gets back. But I just think the team as a whole has to really just right now bite the bullet and develop the staff they have now and see where the dice rolls. I mean, what do you think?
Hey, look, Scott, the work's never done. If the Giants see an opportunity to get the offensive line better, especially on the right side the way it is now, they're not going to hesitate to do it. I think they believe they have three good, young, long-term players in Flowers, Pugh, and Richburg. They're going to hope that Jeff Schwartz continues to play a little bit better. And look, you get Beattie back. You got four guys that I think you're pretty comfortable being starters. You know, then you figure out who your fifth guy is going to be. If, you know, leaving Jeff Schwartz in right guard is an option there, obviously. They brought him in as a free agent, and I think they'd be happy to have him there. So I think that there's always improvement to be had. You want to play better. You want to run the ball better, which has to do with the offensive line. You'd like to be able to open up the offense a little bit more at some more 5- and 7-step drops, which I think they're a little leery to do with Eli right now because of the offensive line. And remember, Eric Flowers is going to get better left tackle in time, too. He's a rookie, and it's always a rough sled in his rookie year. And, Scott, thanks for the call, man. We got to run. But I think Flowers is going to get better just with time. I think Richburg and Pugh have been playing better as the year has gone along. But, look, Lance, if they ever see an opportunity to get the offensive line better, they're going to do it. This isn't a finished product.
But you're not going to draft a right tackle in, you know, the first two rounds. So,
no,
I mean, you have to take that into consideration based on what, you know, the last caller Scott was pointing out. You're set with your five. Now the goal is, obviously, you just want to bring in maybe some other pieces to build up the depth.
You get Beattie off.
Correct. Yeah. Well, but I'm saying once Beattie is fully healthy, he's in your five with the other core three that you just named who you drafted, plus the veteran Jeff Schwartz, which means Marshall Newhouse, John Jerry, these guys now provide the depth.
Join current and former players at Taste of the Giants, presented by Stop and Shop, an evening of fine cuisine from the area's top chefs on Monday, November 9th from 6 to 9 p.m. Tickets on sale now. Visit Giants.com/taste for more information. Great event, great food. Check it out. Len in Columbia, Maryland, to wrap us up. I know we're a little bit over here, folks, but Len's been holding. I want to get him in. Len, you're going to have to be a little brief today, pal. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll try to make it as fast as possible. Good to talk to you guys. Look, let me start with the positive. You know, we're 4-4. We're in first place.
Yep.
We got a good chance to get to 5-4, and I think we will, and I think we will for one simple reason. I think we're going to put better players out on the field on Sunday. I just think we're better than Tampa Bay. But you know, I have this thing for if at least 25 possible matchups that the Giants could have this weekend. I know there's 31 teams, but if we were matched up against a possible, you know, any one of 25 teams. It's so important when you play them and where you're playing them. And I think that has something to do with what happened on Sunday. I'm not going to absolve the defense, you know, or the special teams or anything like that. But I just want to say, you know, we ran into a, you know, a good football team playing great. You know, a quarterback who was hot in a place where it's tough to beat them. Again, you know, no excuses. That was an embarrassment. But a lot of times it's when you're playing these teams – and where you're playing them. You know, if it's New England, it doesn't make any difference. All right? We've got a problem. But for 25 other matchups, I think that has a lot to do with it. But I think we can overcome Tampa Bay because we've got some better players. Also, here's my guy, John. You know, I've been through Tyrod Taylor and Matt Castle. Here's my guy for this week. Any team that starts Chris Conte at safety, has got serious problems.
Chris Conte's bad.
Eli could throw another six this weekend.
You know what?
I know you got.
Go ahead, Lon. Finish up.
Okay, all right. You know, I know you guys, you know, you play with the metrics and so forth. Every time anybody calls in and says something about one area of the metric and you come up with, you guys come up with something else to, you know, to counter what they're saying. Listen, you can have all the metrics in the world. Give me a 10 to 12 sack, three down defensive lineman who plays every week and a free safety who can cover the field. I'll take that metric. You can have all the rest. The Giants have neither one. Why did we sign Dwayne Harris?
I primarily to be a special teams player and to also be a sub-wide receiver.
We're running out of time. Was he in on that last play, on that punt?
You know what? I was actually going to bring this up earlier in the show. He was not on the field for that last punt. Because he had sprained his ankle and sprained his knee earlier in the game playing wide receiver, and they were trying to limit his snaps.
Limit his snap? You're down to the last play of the game.
But Len, he was hurt.
Here's where I'm going with this.
Right.
Look, that's why we got Dwayne Harris. We never thought he was going to be this kind of player when he got on the field. I know we were going to give him the opportunity. We thought Victor would be back. We thought the other guys were going to stay healthy. Our tremendous sixth-round draft pick was going to be a star, and so we were looking at Harris as the fifth or the sixth receiver. He's a special teams player. You got to get this guy out on the field. For the first time all year, I'm really a little nervous about these rotations and who's on the field for certain plays. You know, I was defending Tom Spagnuolo. Let me say one other thing.
In fairness, real quick.
It's a great story, John. Whitlock's a great story.
Yeah.
But the next time he makes a decent block on the fullback position is going to be the first time this year.
Oh, that's not fair, Len.
You check it out. You watch Whitlock. That's why he doesn't get many snaps this fall. You know, if you're going to carry a fullback, carry a fullback.
All right.
Don't carry a guy because he plays three different positions, none of them in an outstanding manner. I mean, you know.
Len's fired up.
Giants are going to win this game. I'm sorry I rambled on.
No, it's all good. No worries, Len.
Tough weekend. I'll see you guys in Tampa. I'm on my way, guys.
All right, Len. Sounds good. And, Len, I will say this. To me, and Lance, I think you'll agree, if Dwayne Harris was healthy, he would have been on the field for that punt.
Well, Shane Vereen had been filling in for most of the returns, and I thought Vereen did a fine
job.
Well,
but he's talking about being a gunner.
He's talking about coverage teams. Right. No, I understand that, but what I'm saying is they may do, at least in one facet of special teams, by Harris not being on the field, and they did want to limit him. Remember, he was carted off the field with a sprained knee and a sprained ankle.
Yes.
He came back into the game because they were dealing with a number of other injuries.
And I talked to him after the game, and he said, I'm really, really sore.
So therefore,
remember, what is in being a gunner entail? A lot of running.
Correct. And you got to be in position, and you got to be able to have your feet, too.
And be physical.
So, you know, the other thing is, and I'm not putting words in Harris's mouth, but I'd be curious whether or not they had a conversation with Harris, John, and asked him, do you feel comfortable if we were to put you out there as the gunner, given your injuries?
I don't know.
Would you put us in a precarious situation? Because here's the thing.
Right.
Here's the dilemma if you're a coach, John. And I'll throw this out even to our listeners. If you have your star player, but he's not 100%, so he's not going to be playing up to his full potential, is it more of a risk to put him out there as opposed to put somebody else that's healthy?
Good question.
I think that's something at least you need to think about and weigh.
Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to play for free today. Jeff Fegel's Week 8, it's in the books. He's not walking away with the big money. Some of the six did okay. Hopefully, helped some people out. Here's what he did. Matthew Stafford, oh boy.
That was not good.
200 yards, one touchdown, 11 points. I mean, you go with a lion. I mean, what do you expect? Justin Forsett, 69 yards, no touchdowns, 8 points. Wow, that was terrible, too. So that's 0-2 for Fegels. Ted Ginn Jr., 2 catches, 60 yards.
And a big drop,
8
too.
Points.
Oh, boy, what a costly drop last night. I mean, they won the game, but they could have sealed it earlier. Anyway.
Sounds like you might have tickets.
No, I did not, actually. I just I cringed when I saw the play because it went right through his hands.
I'm labeling that an 0-3. I'm going 0-3 for Fegels.
Usually I try to defend Jeff Fegels. He can't get my support this week.
Unfortunately, only one of his players hit double digits. Hopefully next week he's going to do better. One of these weeks, guys.
Way to leave it.
To draft your own lineup, go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to claim your free entry today. Thanks for the job on the calls today, guys. Lively conversation on Twitter as well. I tried to answer some of you guys as the show went along. For Lance, I'm John. Tomorrow, Marks and Deal, noon, Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff, Coughlin's Presser at 11, Giants mobile app, Giants.com. Check it out. See you then.
Have a good one.
All right, here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Broken, intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.